You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, September 12th, 2014. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's Casual Friday. You know what that means. I'm wearing a soft-collared shirt. I have eschewed my shorts for a la mode, what al fresco. I'm wearing nothing but socks below my belt area today. And as every casual Friday goes, Cliff Schechter will be joining us to look back on this week. Also joining us, ostensibly to give me a movie recommendation, but we never seem to get there as of late, with the great Andy Kindler. Also on the program today, more reaction to President Obama's announced actions, war, rollback of ISIS. Rebranding, as Michael likes to argue now. Coming up next week, devolution, big vote. Will Great Britain become a little bit less great? Republicans in Georgia concerned, apparently, that African Americans may vote in this upcoming election. The numbers on the internet slowdown, very successful. In fact, I think close to unprecedented, maybe short of SOPA, but nevertheless, huge, huge success for the internet slowdown in terms of comments to the FCC. We'll get to that story about senior citizens still saddled with student debt. The Palins, back in the news, apparently got into a fight when they rolled out of their stretch Hummer up in Alaska. I kid you not. All that and more on today's program. Folks, just a reminder, this program relies on people buying memberships, signing up for memberships, for 98.7% of its revenue. These days, it's probably closer to like 99.5. Nevertheless, if you have the financial means to support this program, please do. It will ensure going on in the future that we will get a more robust internet connection because we will get a different office. Yesterday, in mid-conversation with Chris Woods from Britain, our internet just completely went away. And it's not only for things like that with the infrastructure. Your memberships will allow us to grow and to be better in a myriad of ways. So if you can become a member to support the program, even if you don't want that extra 50 minutes of content, or even if you don't want the option of one day listening to only the better half of the program, it ensures that we can do the first half of the program and that we'll be here for a long time. You can also support this program by buying your Amazon crap at our Amazon link at MajorityReportKickback.com. MajorityReportKickback.com. Click on the Amazon link. Bookmark it. Buy all your Amazon crap through there. You will notice no difference whatsoever, but we will get a little bit of a kickback. JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. It's great coffee. It's a great employee-owned company. They give fair wages for all of their suppliers. They're transparent about their pricing. And you get a 10% discount using the coupon code MAJORITY. And we also get a kickback if you buy the Majority Report blend there. Great gift to friends to turn them on to the show. And, of course, you can also listen to this program, IIM, this program. Listen to it live. Listen to the archives. Search the archives with the app, free for Android and iPhone users alike. Go to majorityapp.com. Get the app. Why would you not do that? It's also a great way to turn people on to the show. Give us a review on iTunes. We'll be right back talking to Cliff Schechter. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Folks, it's Casual Friday. You know what that means. And when you know what that means, you know what that means. And this is the second you know what that means.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC. New media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services? You know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
We are back. On the phone, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Cliff Schechter. Hello, Cliff.
Sammy, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. As I told you before, we went a little bit under the weather. So, you know, my voice cracks a little bit. It's not that I'm reaching puberty. Uh-huh. Although it could be that, too.
And what
it
was
kind
this,
of both.
Is this because of your kids?
Yeah, they, you know, when they go to school, school is like the unmentioned hot zone. Kids go there, you know, they come home with, like, dengue fever and Ebola and the Hunter virus, and then you end up getting it. It kind of sucks.
Don't I know it. How old are your kids now?
They are 7 and 4.
Yeah, it's the four-year-old. The four-year-old, yeah. I remember, back in the day, I could just, Milo would get sick. 3 days later, I would get sick. That's the way it goes.
It's pretty amazing, isn't it? It's like a natural
They're little Petri dishes.
It's inevitable.
They're little Petri dishes.
They really
dishes.
Are.
All right. Well,
so you have this to look forward to in the future, too, which is nice.
I was out of the woods, and then Saul drags me back into the woods, as
round
it were. Saul is.
So let's talk about some terrible people. He's a good kid, even though he gets sick.
Yes. Now, wait a second. Before we get to that, let's want to talk about. Obviously, we're going to talk about your reaction to the president's address on Wednesday. And on Monday, I should remind people that we're going to have Chris Woods back on. He's a great guest and really has a sense of what's going on the ground in Iraq. Let's start with the New York State primary that took place this week. You and I had been talking about this for months, and We had our expectations of what would take place and the implications of those expectations. Obviously, Andrew Cuomo won by, I don't know, he got about 61%, I think. And
yeah, I was so hoping he'd fall under 60. He was under 60 at one point.
But that's right.
You know, but still, I mean, that just would have been the you know, icing on the cake. I think he did end up with about 61%.
And Zephyr Teachout got about 35%, and I think Randy Credico got about 4%. So you're talking about Zephyr Teachout and Tim Wu running for lieutenant governor did even a little better than that. But you're talking about over one-third of Democrats voted against the incumbent governor. That is basically unprecedented, at least in the last, I think, 40 years in New York State.
Right. Well, and important to note that in many upstate counties, like, she wiped the floor with him.
Yes.
One with 70%, 60%, 65%. A lot of what happened here is essentially the Cuomo machine and the Democratic Party machine. I mean, you saw where Wu, lieutenant governor candidate, is you know, suing the party because they spent like $1 million or something like that on behalf of Cuomo, which they are not allowed to do, as if he needed it, right? He spent something like $20 million. They spent something, do you even know?
$500,000.
I was going to say $600,000. So, okay, you're saying $500,000. So I think it came out to, somebody did the calculation of that he spent 60 something dollars for every vote, and she spent like $1.57. I mean, it was that much of a disparity, and it proves something. You know, money is important, but when during times when you know, when you've got such dissatisfaction, during times when people feel strongly about certain issues, by speaking to those issues you can create a wave where, you know, people, I mean, word of mouth, and obviously with social media that is that much larger of a phenomenon, because still a lot of people didn't know who she was. And to get back to what I was saying originally, she won a bunch of those counties, but then you had him, you know, basically he only won Manhattan by about 8,000 votes, but he was cleaning up in sort of those outer borough counties. Yeah. Where you've got more of the machine of the party, Queens, Brooklyn, de Blasio came to his aid, Schneiderman, all these people who are progressive, we've called progressive. I understand in some cases why they did it. I don't, how they did it does not make me happy. You know, de Blasio sitting next to Kathy Hochul and calling her a progressive is a joke.
Yeah.
And he should be embarrassed by that. If he wanted to stand next to her and say, I think Kathy Hochul has the right skills and, you know, integrity or some crap like that to be the better candidate, and he endorsed because he was doing it because he doesn't want Cuomo's retribution to hit city programs he cares about. You know, that's one thing. But to stand there, somebody who got an A rating from the NRA and was endorsed by them, who's referred to immigrants in all sorts of racist ways, who, you know, voted to censure Eric Holder over the made-up Fast and Furious scandal, voted against Obamacare about 30 or I don't know how many times, that's not a progressive.
Right.
You know, she's good on a couple issues, sure. She's good on women's choice and whatever. That's not a progressive. Cuomo's good on a couple issues like that, too. He's not a progressive. And so to stand there and say that is insulting, frankly, to people who, and that's my problem. It's not my problem in the endorsement as much as how he did it. But long story short, these guys saved his bacon, kind of like the Working Families Party did. You know, at this point, they all thought he was going to run away with this thing. Granted, none of them could know the Moreland Commission scandal was going to come up and take over the news cycles. And nobody knew that it was going to come out also that he had engineered, even though we all knew it, that independent breakaway coalition in the Senate.
That ended up caucusing with the Republicans and providing more or less
the votes to block important progressive legislation, a whole variety of things. But so they didn't know that, and they took a risk. And, you know, I have some friends who are very involved with the Working Families Party, and I think they've done a great job. So I'm not going to be too critical. I understand, you know, although for a Working Families Party to stand there and endorse Cuomo is a very sort of surreal thing.
Yeah.
When he's going directly against their interests on everything. But, you know, it comes in the end to look like if that machine had not gotten behind him, if she'd gotten the Working Families Party endorsement, And some of these guys were willing to stand up with her. I think she very likely could have won this thing. I think she would have if she'd had another 2 or 3 weeks anyhow. I think it was headed in her direction. She had massive momentum, and it just couldn't, the free media couldn't get out quick enough for them to be able to do it. But it's an important lesson nationally, because look, we've seen some of us, I'm a veteran of the Ned Lamont, Joe Lieberman affair back in 2006. I helped do Oppo research on that one against Lieberman, where, you know, we beat him in the primary. He pulled a little bit of a Dukakis by going on vacation, which was not a good move.
Right.
And he ended up, you know, all the machine came to his aid, though, and helped him stay in. You know, we've obviously seen stuff with de Blasio came out of nowhere in the polls to win. You know, Elizabeth Warren, in other cases, Sherrod Brown here in Ohio keeps doing it. I mean, I guess what I'm saying in the end is the message and the messenger, it seems to me, are what did it in New York. She's a very charming, a terrific messenger, you know, for what she talks about. And the message, which is not just progressive, it's like old school New Deal breaking up of trusts, which is, I think, a huge, huge area that the Democratic Party is missing right now, not just politically, but in the end, I mean, you know, for fairness sake. I mean, I think you could have you could add to your coalition, in addition to people that think that corporations are out of control, which is like 75% of our population, you could make small business people a core Democratic constituency, because they're the ones in the end who are being destroyed by the Walmarts and people like that. I think that message and some of the other things she was talking about, corruption and the rest, you know, we're in a gilded age here again, and that stuff. We've seen it do really well in other elections, too. Everything's not coming to mind now. And look, this is how the Tea Party's done it on the right. The Tea Party doesn't represent what most of America wants, thank God, but they do represent what their people want. And they've often been vastly outspent, and it's their message that's won. Well, you know, we need to have more people like Zephyr Teach out who have the courage to stand up and run on that message. And that's been a big problem, is that we haven't. And I don't know, I'm not an organizer, I'm a press guy. I don't know the answer to that, how to get more people to be willing to step out and do it, who have the credibility and have the skills and all that. But that's what we need. We need to be challenging in more places, because the truth of the matter is even when you lose, you win. Cuomo's been embarrassed.
Definitely.
His national ambitions are done for the most part. And the deal he made with the Working Families Party, let's see. There's no doubt that things are going to be at least somewhat more progressive, even if it doesn't live up to everything.
Yeah, let's hope that he does. But, you know, there's one, you know, the interesting thing, and this, I don't want to get too into the weeds with this, but the one thing, I mean, you noted that Teach Out and Woo did very poorly in the outer boroughs of New York City. Now, this is relevant because you're talking about an electorate that is only about one-third white in that instance. So, in other words, they did very poorly in minority communities. And
that's right.
Much of the support that Teach Out Woo got was white people, and like you say, in that corridor up Amtrak up towards Albany. And I know that up in Columbia County, where I think she had one of her biggest wins, 70-78%, I think it was. I haven't checked the final numbers, but there was no other races. There was no down ballot races. The only race that was there was this Teach Out Woo candidacy in Credico going against Hochul and Cuomo. I have yet to see any really sort of deep dives into why she lost those outer boroughs, if it was that maybe that was more highly unionized and the union basically said stay home or vote for Cuomo because they had this transactional deal with Cuomo, or if it was the Democratic machine brought out only.
Well, there's a massive machine in Queens, for example. You know, Joe Crowley comes out of that, who's in leadership in the House. I mean, I think it's hard to, I mean, I've heard at least, you're right, I haven't seen a deep dive, I haven't seen all the evidence sort of written in front of me, but I've certainly heard that they got behind the Cuomo ticket big time, right? But I mean, de Blasio, obviously Brooklyn's his home borough, you know, I mean, I don't know how much he did behind the scenes to get people, again, to sort of whip in a way for Cuomo, but just having this guy, you know, who's like royalty almost in Brooklyn do that, stand up for him is certainly going to make a difference there.
Right. Here's my point. I don't want to get too, into the intricacies of New York city and state politics. But why this is important, because I want to keep this on a national level. One, it tells us a couple of things in terms of this message, is that it needs to be broadened on some level. Now, compare this. The next race that we're going to get that is going to be a local race, more or less, but is going to have national implications. And I know that we will be talking about it on this program. And frankly, I know that most of the people who listen to this program are going to be interested in this race, is going to be Karen Lewis versus Rahm Emanuel for mayor of Chicago.
Yeah,
now,
I don't think
Lewis has officially said that she's going to enter the race. I don't know that
she's
done that
yet. That's the only reason we're not talking about it yet. If she has said it, I haven't heard it.
But I want to remind people that Karen Lewis was the head of the Chicago Teachers Union. They had a very successful strike insofar as they were able to mobilize not just the teachers, but the broader community. The electorate in Chicago is, could be anywhere between, 25% and 35% African American. And she has obviously proven, at least in the context of that strike, that she has deep relationships within the African American community. There's more
chance that she can break into that electorate.
Yes, and that also speaks to, why Elizabeth Warren would have a tougher time than, let's say, candidate Barack Obama would in defeating Hillary Clinton in the Democratic primary in 2008. Because
the most loyal, if you remember, even a lot of African American leaders and some constituents came out for Hillary against Obama.
In fact,
African Americans,
he had very low, relatively speaking, had very low support until he won Iowa, which people forget that his support going into Iowa was not unlike the Teach Out Woo support, which was sort of like the, I think it's broader than this, but the so-called creative class of white progressives. And it wasn't until Iowa happened, and many people speculate basically it was just because members of the black community just had a tough time wrapping their heads around the fact that he could actually win. And when he did win in Iowa, that brought a lot of people along.
I think that's part of it. I think also, look, African Americans are a very loyal Democratic constituency, right? I mean, there's no doubt about that. 9 out of 10 votes, going for the Democratic Party. And obviously, from the view, I would think if I were African American, seeing the Republican Party as being an absolute disaster for my interests, and I just think there may be something to the fact that they're more sort of I'm trying to think of what the right word is.
Well, they want to vote for somebody who's going to win in the Democratic Party.
Right, and they're more amenable also to the establishment pitch. At least, they trust the Democratic Party more. And I understand why that is. People like you and I are sort of, having worked with the Democratic Party enough times in my life before, I know not to trust them. There's that, too. And, I mean, I don't like making broad generalizations. I just think that, the Democratic Party, if you look at the last 50 years, has delivered so much to African Americans, even if not recently, nearly as much as they should. And that may breed a kind of loyalty to the establishment that some of us don't have.
Well,
I don't know.
And also, frankly, there could be more fear of a Republican
That's
party.
That's true, too. Because if you and I do just fine, and a lot of people listen here, certainly we're not going to deal with the kind of racist aspects of policy if the Republicans take over. They're going to take away some of our personal rights, and we're going to be horrified because we're progressive and we care about the environment and we care about a variety of things, but it's not going to be the day-to-day kind of life.
And they're not going to be actively trying to disenfranchise us from voting, among other things. The upshot of this is that at the end of the day, I had always perceived Teach Out's campaign to be a protest vote, one to both send a message nationally to Democrats and a message and basically to harm Cuomo's aspirations. And I think by all accounts, regardless of what you think of Teach Out and Wu, they were successful in that regard, that there is a message that has been, you know, sent across the bow and of the Democratic Party. And it also is hopefully inspiration for more of this to take place. So let's with that said,
I'll just say the last thing I want to say about that very quickly is, you know, I don't know why it's almost like we forget what successes are. Every time this has happened, that, you know, at least people say, well, if you don't win, you know, then you haven't accomplished anything. Well, clearly that's not true. First of all, there's the fact that if you get the Working Families Party to extract concessions like you did here, there's a victory in that. This, in the end, is about legislation that helps people's lives. But also, you know, like if you remember the case of Blanche Lincoln when she was running and got got primaried from the left, and suddenly she was all about regulating derivatives. It helps policy. Well, it's why one of the reasons why, you know, people disagreed with me, but in 2012, I warned somebody early on for a couple of months to primary Obama. Not necessarily for the long haul or whatever, because you imagine if a Bernie Sanders was to his left for about 3 or 4 months there?
Right.
I'm just saying, you know, while it's happening, legislation tends to be a lot better and promises tend to get made. That's all I'm saying. Primaries from the left, even if they don't win, are good things, and eventually you do win some of them. And some of the best members we have, you know, like I think of a Donna Edwards, for example, in the House, have gotten there because they've stood up to some of these sort of sellouts, and they've won. We need to do a lot more of it. The Tea Party continually does it.
All right. Well, let's move on, because I want to talk about this. I want to have time to get your take on President Obama's address. There's obviously a lot of issues about this allegedly expanded action in and around Iraq against ISIS. And I say allegedly. I'll get to that in a moment. But we obviously have multiple questions here. Put aside for a moment the strategy. What is clearly problematic, regardless of what the analysis is for the strategy, is, in my mind, the Obama administration's reliance on the authorization of use of military force. In other words, he is, again, following down the Bush path of expanding the what becomes the baseline in terms of presidential authority to wage war. This is very problematic. We overshot the authorization in Libya, and then this is the next step where they don't even feel that they need to get authorization to do what they purport to be them to be doing. And you know, that legal question gets a little bit weedy. But by all accounts, the only thing that I've seen that could justify this, at least on an international level, would be Article 51 from the UN Charter, which basically says that a country can defend itself and can ask another country to help it defend itself. Iraq, the nation of Iraq, is clearly under threat from ISIS. But beyond that, there's no authority from an American perspective, but we can circle back to that. I want to get your sense. There is another theory in terms of reaction to what President Obama said on Wednesday night, which I think Dan Frumkin has been pushing, Professor Juan Cole has been pushing, some others, which is that essentially President Obama went out there and used that speech to quell the war lust that was building in Congress, and that in fact he's not going to do anything more than maintain a defensive posture, that really the strategy is containment of ISIS as opposed to attempting to decimate it,
right.
Because he knows that you can't decimate ISIS. But what you can do is continue to protect Erbil, you can continue to protect Baghdad. which means, you know, protecting the Mosul Dam. It doesn't necessarily mean trying to go after Mosul. I mean, because all of those other things, it seems to me, taking back land in Iraq, being able to successfully bomb in Syria, these are all farcical. You're not going to be able to do that. It's just not possible. All you're going to do is create more recruits for ISIS, it seems to me.
Yeah, I mean, let me sort of, so there's, I think there's a couple of things here. First, to comment on what you started off with in this segment, I have a really big problem with that. And that's what sort of, once again, you know, brings the lie to all these supposed constitutionalists on the right, your Rand Pauls and people like that who claim to care so deeply about the Constitution when they happen to agree with it, or when they've, you know, bastardized what it says for their own purposes, like the Second Amendment. But then when it comes to this, I mean, it's quite clear the founders did not even want us to have a standing army, a permanent standing army, which we do have now. They understood its danger. And I think we've seen that they were right on that one, you know. And so the fact of a president making the unilateral decision, any president, to put the, I mean, you know, we started on that slippery slope with Korea, and it's gotten worse and worse and worse. I mean, we've fought in so many wars, and we haven't declared war in about 70 years. And this just should not be acceptable behavior, you know. It shouldn't be allowed. This is still a democracy. That's my first problem with all this. Second, what Juan Cole is saying and others, I've read some of that, and that may be true because it seems to me, certainly in Iraq, I don't know what we're doing differently than we're doing right now from what President Obama said. It seems like it's the same thing. So maybe I missed something. I don't know. But so that's fine. The thing in Syria that concerns me, when we're talking about arming Syrian rebels, which is something I think we've already done some of, but not a lot of. It's hard to know what we're already doing and what we're not already doing and what we're being told and what we're not being told. But, you know, I just don't know when, you know, when the light goes on and the stupidity of any of that kind of stuff, you know, when that is realized. Either these people, all of them, you know, from the neocons to other people that want to get involved in doing anything like that, are either the stupidest people alive, which is possible, or they just, you know, or they've got great investments in arms companies. Because the truth of the matter is that we're fighting a group right now of ISIS who have our arms, you know, arms that we've given to them. We've probably fought with proxies.
I think I saw a report that said there has been a direct link between arms that ISIS has and arms that members of the more moderate of the rebellion in Syria that Saudis gave them in 2013.
Right.
They've actually literally found serial numbers so they can show this. So,
yeah, I mean, right. And of course, we're still friendly with Saudi Arabia for the clear and obvious reasons. They behead people. Their Wahhabism is sort of their radical Islam, if not exactly the same as what ISIS is doing, is certainly at least three quarters of the way there. Is certainly something that
and according to Congress people and people who have seen 28 pages that were not released from the 9/11 Commission report, it is quite clear that it was official governmental policy of the Saudis to fund the 9/11 terrorists. I mean, that's, you know,
right. Well, they fund these guys.
And that's going to be an issue that's going to come up more, I think, in the near future, right. Frankly.
Well, they fund these guys to sort of and they arm these guys to kind of to sow all sorts of chaos in some of the countries that are their rivals, right? And to try to stop some of the proxy forces for Shia countries there to fight their battles in Lebanon. Yes. Whatever. So we're giving them arms and money, and they're just passing it on to people like ISIS. Or we're giving it to the Iraqi government, and they're just passing it on to some of the Shia militias out there, who, by the way, are also beheading people. And some of the pro-Assad forces, who, by the way, are also beheading people. You know, it just reminds me again of this 9/11 crap. Like, they're terrible people. He's gassing his own people. They're beheading people. Yes, they're vicious, terrible people. And whatever swift punishment comes to them, I would be more than happy for that to happen. However, for us to get involved, to give weaponry to people that could be on the other side tomorrow, could be joining a different Ba'athist militia, could be forming an even more radical group, you know, as ISIS became a radical outgrowth of Al-Qaeda. This is, I mean, how many times do we have to see the same movie from Afghanistan, you know, where we did it, where we saw it in the past, you know, give them all the weaponry and training against the Saudis. Oops. I mean, against the Russians. Oops. That's going to come back and bite us in the ass. And, you know, it happens again and again. And I'm sorry, but I can't believe they're that dumb. So there's just got to be some other agenda there. Well, you know, whether it's corrupt, dishonest, whatever it is, because you just know, you know, how long ago was it since the last time McCain declared we should be fighting a war against Syria? Now we're arming them. I mean, look at what happened in Libya, which is, to me, the worst foreign policy mistake that Obama's made so far. I mean, you know, you got guys who took over our diplomatic compound there swimming in the pool and enjoying life. The militias, by the way, that we supported that are now going around killing people in Libya. It never works, ever. All right. You need to actually have a group of people who, you know, are trustworthy and who are fighting for something that is right and are not going to just sell out to the other side the moment it becomes the place to go. And how often do you have that? You know, and that is the issue here. I mean, all this stuff just gets tiresome. It's our tax money going to put more arms in a region, and they're inevitably going to end up in the hands of people that John McCain's gone over and taken selfies with and posted on Twitter about what wonderful people they are. Or having a great night, drinking in the tent with Gaddafi, but then like a year later you want to bomb them. It actually might be a good way to know who we're going to bomb next, is that John McCain's broken bread with them. It's just, you know, I mean, there's just the Middle East is what it is. It's changing coalitions, and some of the most radical Sunni regimes are the ones who we consider our allies there, who are arming these guys. I mean, it's a fucking mess, pardon my French. And, you know, why are we still doing this? It's just, it's incomprehensible.
There is, I mean, on some level, I mean, maybe it's always been there, but there is, it does seem more extreme than it did. You know, the efforts, it does seem more extreme than it did maybe 25, 30 years ago, but maybe not. That there, the reflexive response of let's drop bombs, man, let's just do this, just seems, and maybe I'm just more conscious of it. I don't know. It just seems to be.
No, I don't think we did this. It was a big deal, if you remember, when Reagan bombed Libya, you know, after the Pan Am flight.
Right.
That was a big deal back then, such that I remember it. I remember when the news was, I think I was about 13 years old or so, and I remember it coming out on the news that had happened. All right. I don't, you know, the bombings we've done since then, they're, you know.
Right. We've dropped more bombs probably this past week in probably multiple countries. They drop bombs.
Right. To me, there's two scenarios.
Whatever it is.
Right, we do this stuff all, and to me there's two scenarios, as I've said in the past, where we should be, that I believe are worthy of getting involved in terms of dropping bombs on people. One is to protect a group of people that you know are good and honest and innocent, the only group of people you can trust almost, which are civilians, who happen to be in a village somewhere and somebody is headed to commit mass genocide because they happen to be Tutsi or something of that sort, and because they're different. That, to me, is justifiable to protect a group of people. The second one is if there's a march on American, you know, the American embassy or somewhere like that, we need to defend our people. Those are the only two times that, to me, it is valid to get in militarily and do something. Otherwise, stay the hell out. And, you know, that's the thing. That's my problem here, is that you dip your toe in the water, and then we get a little deeper in. Before we know it, we'll be arming people that in 5 or 10 years from now, or frankly, 5 or 10 months from now, will have turned against us because somebody paid them more money, or because they found a new form of religion, or who the hell knows what. But the coalitions there are never permanent. They're always switching. And, you know, we don't know what the hell side we're on.
Right.
We've been on every side of that sort of Sunni Shia divide going back to, you know, when we were supporting Iraq in the 1980s versus Iran and the Iraq-Iran war, but then we were secretly arming Iran from good old Ronald Reagan. You know, we've been on every side of that thing. And it just, at some point, it just gets to be ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, I think the value of a sort of a defensive posture in Iraq is simply that ultimately, I mean, it seems quite clear to me that ISIS is going to overreach, and that the one thing that can fuel their success going forward is if they are seen as fighting on behalf of the Sunni against American aggression. And that's why I think this is really a case at the end of the day about efficacy. This simply cannot work. And I hope that, guys like Frumkin and Juan Cole are correct, are correct in saying that, he's actually playing. And, Dan Frumkin is not someone who is going to credit President Obama with this type of stuff easily. I mean, he's
an honest journalist, pretty
skeptical
guy.
But if it is the case that this was more about sort of just satiating Americans' feelings that they got to go around and we got to just bomb the hell out of them.
And also because the Tea Party and those guys are stirring this crap up on the right, about calling him weak. And then, yes, if that's why we did this, and frankly, the president should get up and explain to us in what he's doing in foreign policy anyhow, because we have the right to know. It's
well, that explanation was about as vague as you could get in many respects.
Well,
words like
true.
Roll back, and we may go into Syria, and we can, and there was a lot of we're a terrific country, and it certainly, I think, placated some on the right to a certain extent. I think even Boehner had to come out and say, well, the speech was good, but now we got to see the action. And maybe that's also a clue that he is also convinced that basically President Obama just went out there, gave a speech, not going to do anything.
Well, if that's the case, we're just going to do similar to what we're doing now, which, again, I don't know everything we're doing because I don't think we're being told. But if that is protecting certain people like the Yazidis and others who are ethnic minorities that will be slaughtered, if I could know that for sure, I believe I'm in favor of that.
I interviewed a guy yesterday for just a couple of minutes, and we're gonna actually interview him again on Monday because we couldn't finish the conversation. But according to his reporting, about 70% of what we're doing, what we have done in Iraq, was basically in and around the Mosul Dam. And my understanding is that if ISIS gained control of the Mosul Dam, and at one point they did have it, and apparently the Iraqis took it back, that they could literally destroy Baghdad by blowing up this dam.
That makes sense, and that's, to me, still falls under the rubric of protecting innocent people, and so I can potentially get behind that, depending upon the individual details of what it is we're doing. It's this sort of, but what, to me, where all everything stops. And again, I'd like to think I'm not naive. Unless it's a clear situation where there is one side that is quite good and the other side that's quite evil, which, in George W. Bush's world may happen 100% of the time. In my world, I believe that happens maybe 5% of the time, if that. Then one could maybe convince me to arm one group against another group of people. But when everybody's bad, as we should have learned from when we first armed Diem in the South Vietnamese, that should have been an easy enough lesson that we keep forgetting. And when you're arming corrupt people that don't have the support of their own people, who are leading a coalition that could switch the next day, and everything that goes with that, it never works. It just doesn't. It leads to more violence. It leads to our weapons getting in the wrong hands and everything that comes along with that. Hatred for us in the region and the rest. And that's my problem here, is that I don't fully trust what they're doing. My pleasure. We didn't get to talk about the hillbilly snowmobile fight up in Alaska.
I know. I may have to save that for Andy Kindler. We'll see what he's got to say.
Well, yeah, he can probably do better, because that's the breakaway story of the week as far as I'm concerned.
Cliff Schechter, always a pleasure. Thanks, buddy. Talk to you next week.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot, man. Bye.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to the great Andy Kindler. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. We do have an Andy Kindler theme song. Matt did not find it. He did not keep his eyes open for it.
Unbelievable.
Hold on. Here it comes, buddy. I'm locked and loaded, as you
Wait,
say.
He's not going to hear it on your computer.
He's heard it.
I'm going to hear it, though, right? You can't go around home. His ancestors, typical. God bless America. I'm getting crickets. This is what my theme song is. Silent. And he believes Obama can never be wrong. I'm dying on the radio. I'm dying with my theme. I can't hear my theme song. I'm dying up here. What are you doing to me, Cedar? What are you doing to me? I'm dying. Right, that was the worst moment in my career, in all of our careers. What is this, a prank show? What are you asking teachers? What's going on with you?
Okay, wait a second. So
can we start playing Andy's response to his theme song over every Jimmy?
The beauty of that is now we can actually cut you talking underneath your theme song, and that becomes the theme song.
That's the hook. By the way, after 43 years, you finally got phones I can hear. What did you guys get an extra? What did you have, a fun drive all of a sudden?
We're working on it. Wait, you couldn't hear me before?
It sounds like you're in the next room.
Yeah.
No, I can never hear you. It's an echo. First of all, I'm talking all the time, so why would I hear anybody else? So. Hey, by the way, Sam, Casual Friday? You call this Casual Friday?
Yeah.
You got checked to blow in a gasket? I guess you comrades aren't for freedom all of a sudden.
That was the first thing I was going to say. I was going to say, Andy Kindler, ISIS, go.
Look, let me tell you something.
Yeah.
If I knew less about these topics, I would be in a negative area. We have to do something, Sam. I don't know. My heart isn't in arguing with you. I want to find a bridge to. Let's find common ground. Maybe we can throw paper airplanes from here to ISIS. Oh my God! I have to get a writer or something. Jackie the Joke Man is feeding me jokes.
Is
now
it?
Look, Obama's not George W. Bush, Sam Seder. He's not George W. Bush. So let's clear the decks with that. He didn't. He was against. Who was against the Iraq invasion? Thank you.
Yeah. In fact, Obama said himself that the executive, the president, cannot unilaterally decide to start bombing a country. Of course, he said that back in 2008.
Yes, we can. Yes, we can. Pico Plato.
What? Read Plato? Did you just say
Plato?
Did you just
say Plato?
What?
What'd you say? Did she say Plato?
She say Plato. Okay, I see what you're saying.
Oh, I know what's going on. Hey, look. Let me give you a scenario.
Plato. I thought you said read Plato, and I was like, wow, jeez. Are you saying that we're looking at the shadow in a cave?
Hey, back off, Socrates. Look, Socrates. You got Aristophanes.
So, Andy, so that's what you got on ISIS. You don't now. Are you not going on the road now and doing like your 10 on ISIS?
Let me tell you something. My 10 political material still kills in the clubs. Whether it's David Fry or Richard M. Dixon. Hello, references.
I don't know what you're talking.
Political. They love it. They love it in the clubs. First of all. Anybody goes to a comedy club, they have no knowledge of what happened that day or in the last 3 years. So when you start talking Mosul, they don't know what you're doing. My eyes. Do you know what happens during my shows now? I see people Googling nearest comedy club during my shows. No, here's the thing. I lost my train of thought. But let's do something. Oh, here's my scenario. Sam, the Russians are invading
they got a bomb or something, and you're saying that the president has to convene Congress to decide whether to react? Case closed. Next subject. I win again.
I am Obama bot.
I am Obama bot.
Now, Andy.
First of all, why are they yelling at him? Because he doesn't have a. God, thank God he doesn't have a strategy. He admits he doesn't have a strategy. What's wrong with it? I don't have a strategy yet. Why are you on him for that?
I'm not on him for that.
I know. I have to create some kind of a fake.
Yeah, but don't you think that, don't you think it's problematic that he doesn't get congressional authority? Surely, Andy, even as big of an Obama bot as you are, you can't right. actually think that it's not a good thing. Because when he does this, that means that President Cruz won't have to go get congressional authority.
Hey, I like the sound of that. I like the sound of President Cruz. Look, he should get some kind of a thing. Maybe but I don't know. What do I know from the War Powers Act?
Well, the War Powers Act would say that he's got until October 7th to basically
yes.
wrap this thing up. And then he's got, I think, 30 days to wind it down if he doesn't
yes.
come back and get more authorization from Congress. That's basically what, and he's the one who started the War Powers Act, right? He was the one who sent a notice back, I think it was August 8th, to Congress saying, I'm going to do this under my war powers. I guess it remains to be seen. And Andy, I know that you don't like to go on and provide your foreign policy analysis for free because then you're undercutting yourself.
Well, I'm writing for Commentary, you know, if that's still a magazine, if that's still a reference. Here's the thing. I know what you're saying, but here's the thing that bothers me more than anything else. Well, everything bothers me, but let's put this at the top. Andrea Mitchell, all of these hacks, even this NPR, Scott Horsley, they get this. It's not journalism to keep saying, Scott Horsley on NPR says, Americans are, they're frightened by or something. They're worried about Obama's leadership. This whole narrative that because he didn't immediately bomb Syria, And he changed his mind that he somehow perceived as weak. Everyone's telling the same story, Sam. You're the only alternative voice, and I don't like what you're saying.
Well, I am genuinely sorry about that, Andy.
And Rachel Maddow, if there was a national emergency, let's say there was a real national emergency. Rachel Maddow would start with a 20-minute talk about the history of national emergencies before she told you to get in the bunker. Is there anybody who could say that to that person? Rachel, cut it down. Take it down a notch. Treat people like they're 5 years old instead of 4 years old. Thank you. I rest my case.
There you go. Boom. Boom.
Boom.
Kinlan bringing down the – gosh, we need to bring Dylan Radigan back just to be cannon fodder for you.
Oh! What is he doing now? He's an organic farm yelling at vegetables? I cracked myself up.
Now, Andy.
Yeah.
We get a
– Do you ever prepare? Do you prepare for these interviews?
I do. I'm sitting right in front of me.
Do it.
With a list of questions, and
game
if I could
out.
Get
All
if
right,
I could get a if I could get a question in edgewise with you, we could do this. All right. I mean, this is not going to be one of those typical interviews that you apparently do. I've been reading up on. I'm getting tweets from people like I interviewed Andy Kindler. He was very sweet. I mean, it's these puff pieces that you get written about you. It's not going to happen here, buddy. All right, what's this? I walked across the room last night to say this to Chelsea Peretti. I had
That's
no
right.
feelings when Joan Rivers died. Really?
That's exactly what I said, yes. I walked over to her. I said to myself internally, you know what I should do? I should walk 20 yards over to Chelsea Peretti and communicate to her that I had no feelings about Joan Rivers dying.
Where was she? Where were you?
Oh, well, first of all, I I exaggerated. It was a club called The Attic, and maybe we were 8 feet away. But I have to exaggerate for comedic purposes. No, it's just I just felt that when Joe Rivers died, I did not have any feelings about it. I can't lie. It's not like I'm going to, a year from now, break down weeping. I'm not like, hiding from it. I just have no feeling. I'm not saying I feel bad for her family. I mean, I don't spend a lot of time feeling bad for her family, but I do feel bad for anybody when anybody dies. But she had no influence on my life. I was not a huge fan. Why are you bringing that tweet up, Sam? You're making me look worse.
Yeah, see, this is what I'm doing, buddy. I mean, this is like I said, this is not going to be a puff piece interview. I'm going to hold you.
Oh, man.
You know, I'll be honest, too. I mean, I think my sentimentality towards Joan Rivers has to do with just sort of that she was from that era where there was some, guys like Lenny Bruce around and that era. And also, I think that she was a very important figure particularly for women who are involved in comedy. Not exactly
eulogy material, Sam.
Well, I did not go to the memorial. Let's put it that way.
No. To be absolutely honest, I think she could be capable of being very funny. So yeah, I agree with everything you say. But I also think, and this has nothing to do with me having no feelings, I also think there was a very highly unpleasant side to her, which I saw when she went on Celebrity Apprentice. And she had that kind of a side to her, that humor that I don't care for, Sam. I don't like when people go after other people personally.
Yeah, so well. And, her politics were not so great as of late. But what's this with Ricky Gervais? Why are you so angry at Ricky Gervais?
I think he was terrible. First of all, he's got his web. This is infuriating to me. He has a Twitter account. You know, as I probably said before, half of his tweets are that he doesn't care what other people think about him. Well, then why are you tweeting half the time about that? And then the other thing is he's retweeting fan accounts like it's a pleasant surprise. Oh, the Derek TV show had something nice about me to say. Maybe I'll RT that like it's not a subsidiary of my thing. He's very mean. He's kind of a vicious, mean guy. I can't stand his angry, in-your-face atheism. I love Derek. Let's not kid ourselves. He says, kindness is magic, but he couldn't be more mean. That was the thing I tweeted about yesterday was they had this article in the paper about how when you shame people because of their weight, it doesn't help. It makes it worse for them. And he did that 10-minute chunk in one of his, I'm putting air quotes around, he's also one of these guys who did stand-up 4 times, and now he thinks he's the world's greatest stand-up. When he was a character in The Office, it was hilarious. And that's the other thing. It's like when I'm a big fan of something and they turn, it makes me even more angry. But he did like a 10-minute thing in his special, just mean, vicious stuff about people's weight, because I think at one point he was heavier, so he hates himself heavier, so he's projecting out. Thank you. That's right. It sometimes gets deep with me. By the way, Sam, yes. I'm introducing dynamics into my act. How's it going?
What?
How you doing?
Dynamic? Oh, what do you mean?
Dynamics.
Vocal dynamics.
Vocal. Well, what other dynamics do you have?
I have no idea.
I hate when people in your studio fall asleep. I know when they're falling asleep in there. I know when they're looking at other things.
Now,
I know what's going on.
Now, Andy, this is pretty exciting because this is one of those days where we are, we're going to be recording. I think we have lines together in this episode that's recording this week of Bob's Burgers.
Oh, thanks for telling me. I haven't been informed, Sam. Did you ever think that maybe I'm not in the script?
Oh, I didn't think that. Maybe, are you? Wow, I guess they're just not going to. This is uncomfortable.
This is your idea. Is this your new prank show?
No.
You tell people when you have a part?
I'm telling you.
You see my name in there?
Yeah. You and I have lines.
What part do you think I play? What part do you think I play?
Mort.
They replaced me as Mort.
No, they did not.
Maybe they're going to pick it up later.
Oh, yeah, they'll do something
like that.
All right, well, then forget it.
Sam, I can't even believe it. Did you do the table read this morning?
I'm going to be doing the table read, yeah.
Sam, why are you hurting me on national radio? I'm sorry, not national. Why are you hurting me on regional radio?
Psychographically regional radio.
Why are you hurting me on a show that's streaming 24/7?
Well, Andy, I saw you recently on the new Garfunkel and Oates show. You were great as the mathematician comedian.
I had so much fun doing that show. First of all, I think those girls, I almost called them girls. Those ladies, Garfunkel and Oates, are hilarious.
What is Garfunkel and Oates?
They're these two comedians who use like who are like musical comedians, but they're really funny.
Where is it on?
It's on IFC.
Wow, Jesus, Andy, you're on every program out there, aren't you?
How old are you, Sam? How could you not know about Garfunkel and Oates?
I'm really old.
Can I ask?
What, do you have a Doobie Brothers album at home? I mean, what do you?
Is the new one out yet?
The fire.
Is the new Doobies out yet?
No, I played this part, and I was so excited because Fred Savage was the director, and I was a huge Wonder Years fan. I love that show. So I met him, and I said, I'm starstruck. He said, you'll get over it. I said, I will not get over it. I will continue to fawn over you. And we had a very good rapport.
And do you guys hang out now? Do you guys hang out? Do you hang out now together or what?
Yes, we do. We do.
You know, I did a show that Robbie Benson directed.
I like Robbie Benson.
I knew you would.
Isn't
of course, The Chosen.
Isn't that
all you do, basically? Don't you rewatch The Chosen like three times a week or something?
All I said to Fred Savage is, I'll come over, we'll have champagne, and we'll watch the box set of The Wonder Years. He wouldn't go for it. Wasn't into it. Sam, do you know what you've done to me? I'm actually feverishly checking my email. Feverishly checking.
All right,
why have I...
It's only one line. They're probably doing a pickup.
Oh, one line. So you have a whole big chunk now.
Oh yeah. No, Hugo is back, my man. Hugo is back. Things are going very well. Let's see. Oh yeah, Andy Kindler, sub TBD. All right, don't worry about it, buddy. You'll be fine.
Oh my God! Did you really see sub TBD?
Don't worry about it. Andy Kindler,
what is that sound?
Let me just
sound.
Listen. I gotta go because I don't have too much time because I gotta go to a table read. But listen,
you really do have to go to the table read.
What? Just we got.
Hey, can I call in anyway? Can I call in for my one line? Sam, ask somebody over there. Sam, please, Sam, talk to Lauren Bouchard. Sam, please, come on. Put a good word. You're a fan.
Hey, how about getting me on one of these kids programs that you do all the time? Like Witches of Waverly Place or something. I'd be a hero with my daughter.
Let me get my list out and see which one you want to be on, because I'm on all of them. You want to be on, I can't think of, Not So Franklin, Not So Raven.
What about Lab Rats? Weren't you like a villain on Lab Rats or something? Don't you get the...
Every part I've ever gotten, Sam, is because somebody canceled. I'm not kidding you. Except for Mort.
Well, I got to tell you, we were gonna have Ricky Gervais on today, but he canceled.
Are you telling me you're a huge Ricky? You can't stand him either. So you just want to be.
I don't get that emotionally involved. I really don't. I mean, I like The Office, but you know, I've interviewed Ricky Gervais years ago. He was before there was anything but The Office.
And he was nice to you.
He was perfectly nice,
Hitler
but
was
I
nice.
Just, you know, look,
I met Hitler. He was nice to me. I know the whole thing.
Are you comparing Ricky Gervais to Hitler?
Yes. Hitler, I'll use the same line that I used for Adam Carolla. Hitler was funnier.
Andy Kindler. Comparing Ricky Gervais and Adam Sandler to Hitler.
Adam Carolla to Hitler.
Oh, Adam Carolla. All right, well, that's fair enough, actually. That's okay.
Hitler was funny, they say. Hitler was funnier than Adam Carolla.
Probably. All right, well, when next time you see Carolla, tell him I want to debate him on anything.
I would love that because you could actually do it, whereas I would just get angry.
You got to do it. You got to challenge them to a debate and then have me show up. I mean, I don't know if anybody would know the difference, frankly.
They would just think I was more handsome all of a sudden.
I would just talk a little bit faster.
And they have less points to make.
Yeah. Andy Kindler, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. Thanks, buddy.
I hope I was able to deliver big numbers for you today.
Oh, huge, buddy. I already can tell.
And by the way, for Casual Friday, I'm dressed sloppy.
All right, well, yeah, there we go. In Andy Kindler's world, it's casual every day. Bye, Andy.
I close week. Good night, everybody.
Andy Kindler, folks. Now, do we have a Jimmy Reefer Cake song?
We do.
All right, let's hear it. What is it called?
It's called Star Spangled Banner.
All right, I love it.
The 200-year anniversary of the penning of the Star Spangled Banner by Francis Scott Key is today. As bad as this rendition may be, still better than Roseanne Barr.
Say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, and the rockets' red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there.
Yes, it was. It was still there.
Oh, say, does that star-spangled banner hear wave? Baby, it's waving, still waving over the land of the free and the home of the brave.
Hey, what happened?
Wow, that was a little bit of like Tiny Tim-ish. There's a little bit of Tiny Tim in there.
Tiny Jimmy.
Wow. Good job, Jimmy. I mean, I like the historical context. And
Tiny Jimmy.
There you go. Wow. All right, I guess it's Freebie Friday, right? I mean, we can't avoid it. We gotta somehow figure out a way of cracking down this Freebie Friday thing. I don't know how to do it. I really don't.
If everyone became a member, then it would no longer be a Freebie Friday. Everyone would get the show, and they would all be members.
Right. We wouldn't have this problem. Folks, why do you create this dilemma with me where I don't know how to deal with Freebie Friday?
Just everyone become a member so you could listen to this, and it's not a freebie.
There you go. You become a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. jointhemajorityreport.com. Where you can become a member, super easy. Let's go to the...
And memorable.
Let's go to the IM. Milton Apathy, told you Cliff was wrong. The Georgia election is in play. Yesterday it wasn't clear. I was giving you an example of how a shooting investigation should go. My point was these are not just mistakes. I now think that this department was prepared to back up this guy Wilson after he executed Brown in broad daylight in front of dozens of witnesses. The level of hubris and contempt for the citizens that this takes is mind-blowing to me. Reminder, Milton Apathy, a former police officer. Dr. Radmanthes, hi, Sam. Always love OOB, the original Obama bot. Well, Obama himself, in his own extremist fairy tale, tries to cure the Middle East of the barbaric cancer of ISIS. It appears that some corporations are conceding defeat. ISIS Wallet LLC has rebranded ISIS Wallet app as SoftCard. The CEO said they did not want a bill-paying app to be confused or associated with a violent Islamic militant group. Oddly, their description of ISIS seems more accurate than the president's.
Well, that's pretty amazing. I mean, the next terrorist group should certainly like call themselves like Microsoft or Apple or something like that for maximum effect.
That would be awesome, actually. Turgle Bopper, would Matt consider debating Thunderfoot like he debated? Well, you asked this yesterday.
I 100% would, but you guys got to tell him. Him a Facebook message, a YouTube message, whatever it is, and say, you know, there's this guy on the Majority Report who has been talking about you. You should debate him.
Militant Apathy 1. Wow. Full disclosure, I was on the department when the Neal Street shooting happened in 06. If you take the obvious crime and blatant racist dynamic out of it, the Michael Brown shooting reminds me a lot of that situation. At first, we all united behind those officers who shot 92-year-old Mrs. Johnson. But when the facts started coming out, that changed. The preponderance of evidence just became undeniable. It reached a point wherein we, the officers, collectively had to cut those guys loose emotionally. I personally knew those men. They effed up. They had to pay the price. I don't see this happening here, and this is crazy. This is in response to what we talked about yesterday, and apparently Matt reported on Monday. That being that there was not only another eyewitness account, but a video of those eyewitnesses responding in real time that indicated that backed up their testimony. And it's pretty compelling that Wilson just basically, I mean, executed this guy. Circus. Hey, Sam, I got a smartphone and downloaded the app. It's great. It seems the misogyny in Gamergate towards Anita Sarkeesian proves Amanda Hess right. Women aren't welcome on the internet. It's pathetic. Lestat Canada. I want to see those 28 pages. Do you think Obama will ever release them? No. Michael had a theory today when we were talking about these 28 pages. And I'll do the story. Well, I guess maybe... We're going to try and get the author of this piece about it. But essentially, there are 28 pages that are missing from the 9/11 report that are considered hyper, super, top confidential and top secret. Some lawmakers have seen it, and it really implicates the Saudi government. And what was it? Who was the quote from?
Bandar.
And
he's a former ambassador, Saudi ambassador to the U.S. and a big fixer and this type of thing. And he basically came out and said, we want this released and we want to have an open debate about it. My theory would be that his saying that is complete, lock solid evidence that it will never be released.
That's right. You always will position yourself a call for that if you know there's no chance of that happening.
Yes.
Bush in chains. Yesterday, I was invited to participate in singing with a local opera company to perform a very small piece in an upcoming gala on October 11th. It's a beautiful yet powerful piece. Too bad we don't have time to learn it and perform it in Russian. Enjoy. Wait, what? Here's the piece.
I am so nervous right now, it's not even funny.
Oh, that's an advertisement for Nissan Altima.
Is this the 0.5% that's sponsored by not the members?
Yeah, here we go. There it is. There's Bush in chains.
Wait, is it really?
No. This is the piece that he's going to be...
I thought he actually recorded himself.
Well, now, Bush in chains, when can we get involved in this? October 11th. Opera company. Upcoming gala.
I want to meet Bush in... I want to see Bush in chains. I want to see
somebody get
like
on the Google and try and figure out what it is?
He's going to be there and perform?
He just said he was invited to participate in singing with a local opera company.
Well, he's making it sound like he was invited, but he may not accept.
That's true. Lana Ross Lighton, a Republican from Florida who chairs the House Foreign Affairs Subcommittee on Middle East and North Africa. I'm glad to see people have this 9/11 mentality again. Unbelievable. Good news, Apple P-Brains. No money, no problem. You can now lease an iPhone with nothing out of pocket. subprime cars, subprime houses, and now subprime iPhones on layaway. As Obama continues to play global economic tiddlywinks, Western sanctions will make Moscow back the Chinese yuan against the dollar. Ryan Paul Kelly. Gamergate isn't about people hating feminists.
Oh, boy.
Oh, wait, I think that was from yesterday.
Oh, okay.
Zoe Quinn had two dudes make a terrible game for her because she isn't a feminist and neither is Sarkazian. They are scam artists, just like Alex Jones. Here's the horrible video game that Quinn used her insider contacts with Gawker to get promoted.
Is it called Depression Quest?
Yeah.
Yeah, God forbid she makes a game about depression.
It isn't about misogyny. It's only about a community not wanting to be co-opted by scam artists and profiteers.
How is she a scam artist? She made a game? I don't understand.
Oh, just stop.
Where's the Maya? Where's the Maya? Fine young capitalists. Women are welcome in the gaming community. Frauds and snake oil salesmen are not. All right, Lawless, 1984. Sam, maybe you can ask Ted Cruz's dad why Zephyr did not do good with minorities. Please, Michael, please, please, please. Why didn't they do good?
How? I don't even know how Ted Cruz's dad would even take that one on.
The average black. Wait, I don't even know his accent anymore.
Their name is Zephyr. They know that despite the social justice...
The average black.
The average black.
Understand the Zephyr. I can't.
Zephyr is like
gotta,
a Lucifer.
We gotta play him. We gotta have like him, a bank of him. SBG. Hi Sam. Freebie Friday. Just play La Poupée over the Obama bot talking. Nefertiti. Something to look into. Library of Congress is archiving all public tweets. Archive was supposed to end in 06, but wording actually says something to the effect and continuing going forward. Have a great weekend, boys. Jay-Z, Thunderfoot would crush you, Matt.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Sorry, I love his science videos, but damn, he must have been dumped hard at some point.
Oh, okay, it was a joke. Okay.
Hi, Johnny. Hey, Sam, great show. Wish Kindler was on every week. Have a great weekend, guys. Kyle, how much of Obama not seeking congressional approval due to the fact that Congress would not like to be on record with their approval? Well,
no, I think he wants them.
I think he... he has invited them to approve. It seems like they could just not vote on it, and that would keep him from doing anything because theoretically he can't do it. Now, then the question is, do they censure him for doing something in some fashion? Of course they won't. They don't have the guts to go on record for that either. And the real test is going to be, and I don't know. I mean, don't hold your breath, folks. It's really not that suspenseful. But October 7th is when he's supposed to go back to Congress when the War Powers resolution clock essentially ticks out. And he didn't even seem to mention it the other night. So I don't know. We'll see. Mike Ox Smells. Sam, I could also get some free promo like Bush and Chains. I'm performing my penis puppetry show at the YMCA next Friday at 6 p.m. The Internet Slowdown Day, which took place, what was this? Yesterday. Oh, gosh. Where's all my... I don't know what happened to all my organization this morning. I got a little bit lost, folks. Here it is. No. Gosh. Darn it. Yesterday really threw me off. We had all sorts of technical difficulties and it threw me off. So wait, let me dig this through my stack here and find this. So as you know, 2 days ago, September 10th, was Internet Slowdown Day. And we had Tim Carr on from freepress.net to talk about the issue of net neutrality. This was a protest and a way to drive comments to the FCC about the FCC's plans or lack of plans to reclassify the internet as a common carrier under Title II of the Telecommunications Act. 303,000 calls in one day to Congress on this issue. 2 million, almost 2.2 million emails sent to Congress. And another 725,000 comments filed with the FCC. You still have time to comment and try and push the FCC to reclassify the internet as a common carrier. And we'll put a link at Majority FM. And if we cut this up as a bit, we'll put it, there'll be a link down below in the description. You got a couple of days to do it, I think. A couple of days now. So contact the FCC. Tell them you want the internet to be reclassified as a common carrier so that net neutrality can be protected. Very important. It was a very successful campaign by all accounts. I think you're up around now 2 million, 2 million comments to the FCC on these net neutrality.
It surpassed their most ever commented case, which was the Janet Jackson Super Bowl nip slip.
Well, that was
embarrassing.
So it's finally something of use and value has surpassed that one.
And Buonara, I want to hear the gamers explain how once they get all the improvements in gaming journalism, they demand how the world is going to be the tiniest bit better.
You know what their number? You know what the actual like the community that's been organizing this Gamergate thing? You know what their number one demand is?
I don't even.
If most gamers do not like a game and you like it, then you're wrong.
Well, that would be that's like saying you're not, to a food critic, like, hey, you can't knock McDonald's burgers.
Oh, well, all of a sudden, Matt might be on board for that type of campaign.
Everyone's got their own taste. Someone can knock something everyone else doesn't like. I mean, everyone else likes, and vice versa.
Just a reminder.
Matt,
I want to make this.
Chill.
I want to just give everybody a heads up. In 9 days in this city, September 21st, there's going to be a massive protest, climate change. The World Meteorological Organization announced earlier this week that global levels of carbon dioxide reached their highest point ever in 2013. That's not a big surprise, but what is problematic or somewhat surprising is the rate of growth. According to the World Meteorological Organization, the rate of growth is increasing not simply because human beings continue to emit more and more carbon dioxide from power plants, cars, factories, factory farms, etc. But according to the World Meteorological Organization, early data is suggesting that the world's oceans and forests are now absorbing less of our extra carbon dioxide than they used to. In other words, they're getting to a saturation point. And that means that more of it ends up in the atmosphere where it traps heat and warms the planet. So, you know, I don't know how much good it's going to do, but those protests are taking place Sunday, a week from Sunday in New York City. And I imagine there's some they're going around the country. We will try and get somebody on next week, actually, to talk about this. Michael, make a note. Maybe we can get Bill McKibben. This story also a little bit disturbing. It pushed together two disturbing trends. One is that we have a record amount of student debt in this country. And then the other, we know that Social Security benefits are not keeping up with the rate of inflation. 155,000 Americans had their Social Security benefits reduced in 2013 because they defaulted on student loan. This is a report from the Government Accountability Office this past week. The figure has risen steadily since 2002, when 31,000 Americans had retirement, disability, and survivor benefits cut because of student debt. Five times more. Most of the Americans affected are above 50 years old. A rising share are 65 and older. Last year, 36,000 Americans aged 65 and older had benefits cut because of student debt. 71% of these people were receiving disability income, which means that they're not able to work. You cannot. Now, we know Education Department is the primary lender of to students, holds roughly 90% of student debt, which is at about $1.2 trillion now. They, of course, farm this out to private collecting agencies. Under federal law, student debt cannot be discharged in bankruptcy. The government has to stop, at the very least, garnishing the disability payments for Americans who can't work. Unbelievable. We got to make universities free. We got to basically say we're going to reduce principals or cut down on interest rates. Just ridiculous. Just ridiculous. The final IM of the week. Nefertiti. Didn't Jack Kingston say they would go after Obama whichever way things go? So they were not going to do a vote. It was win-win situation set up. So why do anything? Indeed. All right, folks, see you Monday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm going to get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. Finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. I get somewhere the choice is made, for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. I shifted in and out of gear, waiting for my moment to happen. I don't know how much longer I can stay in, or how much more I've got to pay.